Shalom, it's Rabbi Jimmy Golf. Thank you so much for joining me this week. Well, I'm going to go back to the archives since this past week was Purim, and we were once again making sure that Haman got his licks in, and then we gave him his. So this week we're going to hear an archive sermon from Vayikra, and we're also going to hear a little guitar playing, and you'll actually hear me playing the guitar as best I can, and singing as best I can, though I have to admit I was just a little sick. The song Hallelujah, one of the most upbeat and uplifting songs out of the Reformed tradition, and I hope it gets your toes tapping. So we're going to talk a little bit this week about the one thing that allowed Jews to survive, and why maybe Vayikra isn't necessarily a good guide to finding that one thing. So stay tuned. Thank you for joining me, and I wish you shalom, wholeness, peace, and complete life. Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah. Shalom. My rabbi, Bill Schwartz, once told the story of a visit by a church group to the synagogue of my youth in Pensacola, Florida. Rabbi Schwartz took the group through the building, showing them the Torot and the Ark. He had answered a lot of their questions and led a discussion about the differences between Judaism and Christianity. Finally, he asked for questions as a conclusion. One of the visitors shyly raised his hand. Yes, he called upon his guest. Well, Rabbi, this has been very interesting, but haven't we missed something? Rabbi Schwartz was puzzled. What do you think we've missed? He asked. Well, Rabbi, he began with a little hesitation in his voice. Where do y'all do the sacrifices? We arrived this week at some of the most difficult parts of the Torah for our generation, and I would suggest for generations that preceded us. Personally, as a vegetarian, I have a difficulty with the blood, gore, descriptions of the sacrifices that took place in the tabernacle, and later in Solomon's and then the Second Temple. It seems more than just a little barbaric that we've got to kill something in order to sanctify the, quote, God of life, unquote. I say this, and yet we know that even the rabbis in ancient times had the ability to divorce themselves from the sacrifices described in our Torah portion in order for Judaism to survive. Maimonides, or the Rambam, also had a problem with our Torah portion this morning. Commenting on the second verse of the parasha, he addresses the notion of sacrifice and assigns it a position as the lesser of two evils. You see, Maimonides considered that the Israelites leaving Egypt were somewhat infantile in their understanding of religion. They only knew idols and sacrifices. The first of these reared its ugly head with the incident of the golden calf. And Maimonides argued that God then, if you will, learned something about human nature. If all the expressions that the Israelite community was used to were removed from their midst, They would have a God like none other, and they would have a religion that no one in the community would acknowledge as legitimate. Thus, God allowed the sacrifices so that the Israelites could begin to wean themselves from idolatry gradually. If Israel wanted to offer sacrifices, they would be to Adonai. Over the course of Jewish history, the change of sacrifices, or lack of sacrifices, was and is one of the predominant themes in Judaism. Maimonides might have been secretly overjoyed that he did not have to consider sacrifices. Yet the moment when these offerings ended proved one of the greatest challenges to Judaism. We have had to confront our parsha, and very often the lack of being able to offer sacrifices as a means of communicating with God, and these have often been considered to be some of the worst of times. Judaism has always had to adapt. After the sacrifices were no longer possible, it was not the end of Judaism as we know it. Rather, it was the beginning. It was the end of other expressions of Judaism that existed during the period of the first century. You see, when Judaism, that is the Judaism we commonly know today, was in its infancy, it had to compete against other schools of Jewish thought. Today, we only speak of these other possibilities as historical curiosities. Yet the Sadducees, Essenes, Therapeutai were possible paths that Judaism might have taken long ago, before the destruction of the temple and the end of the sacrificial cult. Pharisaic Judaism transformed itself into Rabbinic Judaism, and thus we who claim a connection back to Sinai continue with rabbis as our teachers and leaders in the Jewish world today. This was the Pharisaic tradition, yet it very well could have been different. It might have been that another expression of Judaism could have competed with the Pharisaic interpretation and may have contended to be the common expression of what we call Judaism today. But history had its twists and turns, and a certain degree of luck ensured that the Pharisees won the battle of ideas. Thus began the creation of the rabbinate in Judaism that continues until this day. Often when I speak with visiting Christian groups, one of the issues they cannot understand regarding Judaism is the lack of sacrifice today. They are looking for the place in the synagogue where we do the sacrifices. Today, no less. It is as if Judaism does not have the right, to use a bad term, to adapt to the conditions that confronted our community over the past 2,000 years. One of the issues that I pull amidst the various understandings that people often bring to the synagogue is this: religion has, at some level, to adapt to the world around it. If we had remained the same community that existed in the days of the ill-fated Second Temple, we would no longer exist today, or we would not be able to enjoy our existence, since we would continue to worry about rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem. That would be the third temple, though there are some Jews who, full disclosure, there are some Jews who actually do want to build that particular building, but that's another sermon and another story. How did we adapt over time? The first piece to know is that a certain leader of the Pharisees by the name of Yochanan ben Zakkai, as legend has it, was one of those holding out in Jerusalem. Realizing that Jerusalem was doomed and that there was little hope for the city or its inhabitants, he smuggled himself out of the city in a coffin.
Upon leaving the city, the Roman officials wanted to run him through just to make sure that he was really dead. And he exited the coffin as Vespasian, the Roman general in charge of the siege, walked by. He addressed the general by saying, "Hail, Emperor Vespasian." Continuing the legend, Vespasian received word at that moment that Nero had committed suicide, and Vespasian offered Yohanan one request. Yohanan replied, "Give me Yavne." Yavne would be the first home of the rabbis, and it was there that they worked out how Judaism would survive beyond the catastrophe that engulfed the holy city. Yohanan first devised a prayer that replaced sacrifices. It is a prayer that we continue to use today called Amidah, or standing prayer. It allowed us to continue to worship God as best we could, and at the same time not rely on the instructions we receive in the Torah this week. Yet the rabbis were even more creative. What if you did not pray the prayer? What else could you do? Rabbinic Judaism began to identify study as being equal to doing certain mitzvot, specifically prayer. Or, in some cases, even sacrifices. If you needed to offer a sin offering, you could study the Torah portion this morning, and that would provide atonement for you. Study was equal to prayer. And the act of doing the ritual was made sure that no Jew was ever really far away from being able to access God in a way that would be considered holy. In the face of devastating conditions, the rabbis gave the Jewish community what it needed to survive. Hope. That was the one ingredient. As long as the texts were studied, the practice would not be forgotten. And if memory remained, the Jewish community would not lose its connection to the sacred soil or rituals. Yes, the temple stood in ruins, but the ideas and religious concepts that it stood for continued. Today we find ourselves in different times with different challenges. There is a sense that we too live in the interesting times, and that the tensions that exist today might be able to overcome our ancient traditions. This feeling might be correct, yet we are the inheritors of a religious view of the world that might bemoan the end of Judaism, but never allows Judaism to actually die. One scholar calls us the constantly dying people, which means that we are also, at some level, constantly alive. Our rabbinic tradition has taught us two important concepts. First is that it is better to bend than break. We see this in the survival and thriving of rabbinic Judaism from Yavne until today. The second is that we follow teachings that constantly remind us that as long as there is hope, there is a future. That hope is stronger than the most powerful army in any age, for it is hope that makes us continue and that leads to a future. How did we adapt? We defined Judaism for the reality that we saw in front of us. Because we interpreted, studied, and lived the teachings, we survived. What do we learn from the sacrifices in our Torah portion? I would suggest several possible ideas, but one really is probably the most important. We can overcome the greatest of obstacles, even the destruction of the most important place in Judaism, when we creatively hope and act and study and learn for our future. Shavua Tov and Shabbat Shalom.